Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Oh, man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Sunny day in Brooklyn today, and we are joined today by Mr. Michael Neff, proprietor of Ward 3 in Tribeca and Rum House in Times Square, two great bars that I have had the joy of drinking at lately, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Glad you can make it. These bars ran around, at least Ward 3's been around for...
2.5 years. Well, almost three.
Cool. Well, congratulations
on
that.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you can see the gray in my hair has actually gone up quite a bit since
Cool, man. So what was the inspiration behind Ward 3?
I have two partners in Ward 3, Kenneth McCoy and Abdul Tabini. excuse me. We were longtime bartenders. We're longtime bartenders in Tribeca. So I've worked in Tribeca for 12, almost 13 years. Abdul, 14, 15. Kenny, same as me. And we wanted to kind of see what would happen if kind of journeyman bartenders were to open the place that they always wanted in the neighborhood they always wanted to be in. And we were lucky enough we got to do that.
In Tribeca.
Yep.
That's great. There are quite a few, obviously, there are some other cocktail bars, not quite a few, but there are a few other ones. You've got like Weather Up, for instance.
Sure, sure. Tribeca. Well, it's getting back there, yeah.
Yeah, so there's an actual like kind of cocktail bar kind of scene happening down in Tribeca. There's actually like a synergy. There's a cool energy happening with all these, this handful of bars around. So it's become like a destination again for the connoisseur of cocktails,
which is a fantastic place to be. I mean, you never want to be the only one.
Yeah,
and you know, before you can't talk about Tribeca without talking about 9/11, especially for like modern people, mm-hmm. and for those of us who worked there before 9/11, there was this really kind of vibrant like nightlife scene. It was before people were talking a lot about cocktails, so that was definitely there. And then after 9/11, so many places left. So many places failed. So many places lost money. A lot of people moved out of the neighborhood. And it took literally this amount of time to kind of claw back to the point where, you know, people are coming down there for a specific reason. And the reason you don't want to be the only one is if you're going to go all the way down there, what happens if it's not, you know, what happens if it's dead or it's slow or there's no girls there or whatever? I mean, it's nice to be able to say, look, come down to this area and I will personally walk you to 5 different bars.
Yeah.
That are, it's a great time. You know, it's one of those strange kind of miracle on 34th Street things where, you know, I have no stake in telling everybody just come to my place. It's like, no, we're neighbors. It's like, we're pals with everybody.
Awesome. And so you're saying there was a very rich, vibrant nightlife before.
Absolutely.
More like kind of like nightclubs and other kinds of bars like that. I mean, it was obviously before the cocktail kind of boom, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, oddly, I mean, I worked at a place down there for a long time called Grace, and Grace is one of those kind of proto-cocktail bars that, for people who've been around a long time, you know, cocktails is a very strange thing. You know, I started 17 years ago. I happened to work in a bar and learned from a guy who no one has ever heard of how to make cocktails with fresh juices, and this was in 1994, 95, you know, in Seattle, in this very strange place. And so it's just something that I always did. And so now that everybody wants to kind of write about it and talk about it, and it's fantastic. Consumer education, big deal. You know, people going and buying books and making cocktails at home, huge deal. But for some, there's a certain group of us who've been doing this for a long time. It's like, it's a fantastic thing that everybody else has kind of got to the point that they want us to do what we've always done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first started bartending, I haven't been doing it as long as you have. Or a lot of people, for that matter. Just been about 7 or 8 years now.
It's respectable.
Well, I feel like, you know, I've learned a lot in those years. But yeah, I just remember having a mentor, kind of like what you were just talking about. You know, I was working at just like restaurant bars and in Oklahoma City, and the first time someone, you know, I looked at a lot of cocktail books, nothing really great to speak of at that time. But yeah. And like you said, we have so many more to look at these days. But I remember when one of the bar owners that I worked for taught me how to make a real martini, you know, stirred, actually using the right proportion of vermouth, you know, like doing like 2-to-1 gin sure. to vermouth and actually using orange bitters and the whole shebang. It was a turning point for me as a bartender, and it really made
transformative moments. I mean, and it's like when you make someone their first Manhattan, which to me is always like a privilege. It's like, oh, you never had one of these before? No. Listen, like this, if for a certain type of person, it changes their life.
Absolutely.
And I don't know why, I don't know how, but it is, and it's awesome to participate in.
It's like going to your first real rock and roll show.
Exactly right.
Totally. It's a whole experience too. There's a ritual to making these drinks, and people do them in different ways, and as long as the end product is just spot on and just an amazing Manhattan,
sure,
as you say. That's really what it's all about. And you guys actually do pretty high, like all the times I've been to Ward 3, you guys are doing a pretty high volume, and you don't have a door policy.
Nope.
So it's come one, come all.
Sure.
And so you guys do some things technically different than, you know, the jiggered, cracked ice kind of thing that a lot of the cocktail bars do, where they take, you know, 20 minutes to make your drink.
Sure.
Like you guys, you do free pour.
Yep.
And that's awesome because you can actually appease the crowd, because the worst thing in the world to do is wait forever for a drink. But it's almost worse to wait forever for a good drink, in my opinion.
Well, waiting forever with nothing else to look at. I mean, people often, excuse me, people often, they say, well, how come you don't measure? Because they, you know, they don't know what a jigger is. They don't know what we talk about. They have no idea of the little ins and outs and the nuances of making cocktails. All they know is they like to drink them. They pay their money and they get a drink. And so they're watching a guy free pour, just dumping, you know, juice into a glass or something. And they're like, well, how come you don't measure? And it's like, free pouring is a really interesting art, because I can give you in a mixing glass a 1/4 ounce, a 1/2 ounce, 3/4 ounces, 1 ounce, 1.5, 2, 2.5, 3, 6, whatever fits in there. It's just a matter of training yourself to the point where it's called pour testing, you know, and I still do, you know, after 17 years, I still do it just to recalibrate myself. Mm-hmm. So I'll pour 2 ounces into a glass, dump it into a jigger, right on. And I'll do that 50 times, you know, as I think about it. And then I'll do an ounce, then I'll do half an ounce, just to make sure that I actually am measuring, instead of just kind of, you know, at this point, a lot of it's by feel. You know, we smell our cocktails, we look at them, we know how it looks. So I could probably do it blindfolded. Awesome. Only because I can feel what's coming out of the pour spout.
Yeah.
But that would just be me showing off. I mean, there's no reason to do that.
Well, only for yourself, you know,
well,
to like you said, as you put it, to recalibrate. And I think that's definitely an art form that is completely respectable. And, you know, there aren't too many places doing it that are doing cocktails. But, man, once you get in, it's my buddy Tim Cooper, who works at Gold Bar.
Sure, yeah.
You
know, he's a monster.
Everyone calls him a monster. Yeah. That's funny you said that. You know, he'll use jiggers for the first part of the night, but once that, you know, it's a club, turns into a club, and then once it gets going, you know, you got to start free pouring. But once, like, even inspecting what you're doing as a bartender when you're pouring, because you're still using pour spouts when you're, a lot of times, unless you're like milk and honey, where they're taking the caps off. But if you have pour spouts, it's almost like two steps when you could just knock it out in like one step, you know, like if you know the flow of that pour spout, like you were saying,
no doubt,
then you can count it out. You know, you get your middle time clock, and you can get to the point where you can pop out a 1/4 ounce or 2 ounces. Sure. And
well, and to us, free pouring is not the compromise moment, you know, so I don't jigger when it's slow. And then when it gets busy, you have to compromise by saying, okay, now I have to be fast, thus I'm not going to use a jigger. I do it all the time. But because that's how I think it should be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is fungible. Everything is different. You know, one day juice tastes like this, one day simple syrup tastes like that. So well, you're asking for a whiskey sour, one day you're using Johnny Drum 101, the next day you're out of that and you use a Maker's Mark, entirely different cocktails.
Right.
So the trick is to learn the balance and to be able to kind of learn the balance on the fly and then to adjust on microcosmic moments every single time you're doing it. So I constantly taste cocktails. I went to the doctor the other day and he asked me how much I drank and I'm like, I don't actually know.
Yeah, because of all the
straw. Only because I straw every single cocktail, but if I make, I mean, I might make 500 cocktails on a Friday night, just myself. And if I taste 90% of them, which I try to do, that's, I mean, it's got to add up. I mean, it can't be good for me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I remember my first bar job in New York City. The guy...
Which is where?
It was actually at a little Japanese dessert place. It was all like shochu and sake cocktails, sure. Which was really a great experience for me because I got to work with a lot of different, not only spirits, but ingredients that I never worked with before. And the guy who designed most of the cocktails for the opening hadn't drunk for like 4 or 5 years,
yeah.
But he was straw tasting everything. Sure. So it's like, it adds up.
Well, I mean, that's the only way you can do it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, he wasn't spitting out or anything.
Yeah,
so.
No doubt.
But,
well, and I don't stumble home every night. So, I mean, maybe it's like, I feel like it's taking little bits of poison.
Yeah.
You know, my tolerance must be something. I really have no idea. But yeah, it does have to add up.
Yeah. So, with these cocktails that you guys do, you said before you have a cocktail menu that consists of 17 drinks?
We kind of have two menus. I mean, we have a cocktail menu that's designed to have simple but delicious, quickly executable cocktails. We have kind of a premium cocktail section that is costs a little bit more money but uses more expensive ingredients. A lot of those are more stirred. They're more interesting, more boozy. And then we have a section of classics or derivations of classics. But, you know, we'll have a New York Sour. We'll have an Old Fashioned Manhattan, French 75, stuff like that. But the thing that kind of distinguishes us is we do bespoke cocktails. Mm-hmm. So we have a list that says basically a whole series of categories and words under those categories. So the first category is spirit. It'll say vodka, gin, bourbon, rum, pisco, whatever. There's a section on texture, mouthfeel, flavor, fruit, seasonal ingredients. And so people can kind of go and kind of say, I like gin, I like spirit forward, I like cardamom, and I like Scooby-Doo. And our job then becomes to make a cocktail of that that's crafted for those people specifically. And we had this idea in the very... excuse me. We had this idea in the very beginning, and we kind of, because we had been doing this at other bars anyway. I mean, I opened Macau Trading Company, which is in Tribeca as well. And it was very high volume. It started off right off the bat and a very intense menu. But what I realized that after 6 months, there's only one vodka cocktail on the menu and it's got coconut milk in it. So people would come back on a regular basis saying like, look, I want a vodka cocktail. I don't like that one. Or it's really intense and I had two. I want something else. Can you make me something? Can you make me something? Can you make me something? So we tried to figure out a way we could write on paper a way that we can make that process efficient. And that's what the bespoke cocktail menu is. And that's, it's not easy, but people, it brings people back into the process, makes it about them, which is what it should be about.
Absolutely. And that goes back to exactly what you were talking about, with, you know, like free pouring and keeping your eyes up on the crowd.
Indeed.
And, you know, not taking 20 minutes to make a drink.
Sure.
You know, it should be about the customer. And we were talking a little bit about this before the show. You were talking about how one of the real focuses for Ward 3 was to have a higher level of customer service.
Indeed.
And that's something a lot of people don't really focus on nowadays. I mean, especially with the younger crowd. Nothing wrong with the younger crowd of bartenders, but you know, anyone can take a bunch of ingredients and write out a cocktail menu. They may not be great, but you can write a cocktail menu. It comes down to giving the customer what they want and making them happy, giving them the experience that they were expecting, or a little bit more. And appeasing a crowd, giving them a cool environment to hang out in. You know, they don't have to come to your bar.
No, they can go to many bars. But, I mean, it is all of it is service.
Yeah.
We're not here for cocktails. Cocktails is part of service. Service is what we do. And if you don't realize that and internalize it, then you're marginalizing yourself.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, let's talk a little bit more about War 3. And also, let's talk about Rum House.
You got it.
All right. Back with Michael Neff in just a moment.
Grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have Michael Neff of War 3 and Rum House. Rum House just opened about a year ago?
Just over a year, yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me that you guys actually kind of took a step in a different direction from what a lot of cocktail bars have done in New York City recently. You went to Midtown.
Not just Midtown. We went to Times Square.
Times Square, yeah. Absolutely. And you're on...
47th, right off the top of the square.
And it's such a cool bar. It's in the Edison Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Edison Hotel. And just a cool, cool place. It's got a old school saloony kind of like nautical kind of thing going on.
Beautiful. I mean, we take very little credit for how that bar looks. It's an old bar. It's been there for 50 years at least. Well, yeah, people argue about how long it's been there. But, you know, we kind of went in and pulled out what needed to stay and got rid of what didn't need to be there and kind of ended up with this little gem. And it's a beautiful bar. I love it. It's one of my favorite bars in the city. My participation notwithstanding.
The few times that I've been there, I've been there about five times now. And the vibe there is really cool. One of the things I like most about it, I mean, obviously you take a lot of the ideals of Word 3, and even like some of the bartenders are wearing War 3 shirts and, but you take that service aspect there and you keep that going. And this has nothing to do with bartending, but I love that you have a piano in the bar.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things.
Mean, it's fun and it should be fun. I mean, but see, that bar should be fun.
Yeah.
And for some people, watching someone make a cocktail is the fun part. And I get that. And it's fun for me too. But, you know, we don't really call ourselves a cocktail bar only because we don't differentiate between one kind and another.
Yeah.
It's a bar. We talked about the door policy earlier. It's a bar. Like for us, a bar is a place that is, it's a basis of a community. It's where anybody can go as long as you act right.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to get what you want. Whether what you want is a pint of beer or a vodka soda or a fancy cocktail that takes, you know, 15 minutes to make, that's cool too. Like all of it's cool. We're not trying to be all things to all people, but to me, the word bar implies that you can get a cocktail.
Absolutely.
Because that's where you go for cocktails.
That's where you go for a drink.
You know, and at the same time, I would say to, you know, kind of like young new mixologists who are really happy and really like all focused about just making drinks, I would say to guys who work in a sports bar, why can't I get a decent old fashioned? There's no excuse for it. I mean, if you have bitters, which you probably do, if you have some form of sugar, and if you have whiskey, then you can make it old-fashioned.
Absolutely. I talk about this quite a bit, but and I'm sure people are sick of me talking about this, but but to me, it's like when people say, when they use the term cocktail bar, it drives me insane. Just because, like, it's a bar. Every bar should be a cocktail bar. It's like calling a restaurant a food restaurant.
Sure.
You know? It's like, you should be able to get a cocktail at any bar. Just like you should be able to get food
at
a restaurant.
Exactly. It's kind of in the definition.
Yeah. It's like, bless you. That was Jack, our producer. So I agree with what you're saying. There are a lot of new bartenders, or even people who've been bartending, you know, they're like dive bars, sports bars, or just like restaurant bars, neighborhood bars, you know, your standard neighborhood place that you go to and you grab a pint and shot of whiskey, or maybe you get like a martini there. Everyone should know, if you're bartending, I mean, even if you're just doing it while you're getting through school, or it's something between jobs, you should know how, like, you should take pride in what you're doing. Well, like, sure. Anything in your life, you should take a lot of pride in what you're doing and actually know what you're doing. You know, there are a lot of other people out there who could do it better than you, so they could take your job at any moment.
Well, exactly right. But, you know, we're in an interesting place, because I had, you know, I know other bar owners, and I've known, like, one guy in particular who will not be named, who's a very good friend of mine. You know, when we started, he got a lot of play out of going, like, hey, you fancy cocktail guys, like, that's cool. Like, we do, you know, shots, we do beers, we're a bar. I'm like, okay, fine. But 2 weeks ago, he comes to me and he says, Michael, can you come over and just, like, can you show the staff just how to make, like, an old-fashioned Manhattan? Like, just, like, the regular things. And to me, that's progress.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you can go into, you know, what is in essence an Irish pub, which is its own thing, and it's a beautiful thing, it's a very community-based thing, and still get a decent old-fashioned or a decent Manhattan, it's all about what people know how to do. And it's part of the skill set that he wants to offer to his clientele. And the fact that he gets to that point after having the opinion of the movement that he has, then to me, that's real progress.
Absolutely. And it really goes back to what you were saying about having, you know, a quote-unquote, like, cocktail bar. And then the person that comes in, they're just like, hey, man, I just want a vodka soda or a beer and a shot. We're happy to do that for them. So on the flip side of that, you go into an Irish pub.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to ask for penicillin, but...
Yeah. But you know, if you order something classic like a Manhattan, it's like, dude, you know how to make that.
Why does it suck?
Yeah. Seriously. But yeah, I mean, like, I think we are making a lot of progress nowadays with the state of bartending and the bars that we go to. There's a lot more. I mean, this is all born out of the consumer and the client at the bar, the customers that come around and they see what's going on. And, you know, there are certain TV shows I'm not going to name that, you know, probably promoted certain classic cocktails. Like, a lot of people didn't know what a Gibson was before, you know, a couple of years ago. And now, you know.
It rhymes with Radman.
Which is what you are. So, I mean, like, yeah, so it's just the same way that, you know, you got to give the people what they want.
Sure.
And the customers, the consumer, they've become a lot more educated over the past, you know,
which is how this movement will have legs, and which will how, like, well, I mean, this is a new golden age of bartending, and
standard.
And I believe it. Yeah. And it's going now all over the world. It's going little, you know, little bars in Wichita. It's, you know, Phoenix, yeah. Arizona. It's no longer just San Francisco, London, and New York. But, you know, the more that the consumer gets educated, the more it becomes our responsibility to educate them. But that's a double-edged sword, because we have to give them that if they want it.
Yeah.
If they don't want it, we have to offer them the opportunity. You know, maybe it's there. They can see it. They'll figure it out for themselves. But the last thing someone wants is to walk into a bar and feel judged.
Absolutely.
I want a melon ball. Okay. I mean, I don't think it's the best. I think it's a horrible cocktail, actually. And I know where it comes from. In the 70s, the 80s, and there is a way to make it good, but it's really hard to do. And it's not what people... If someone orders it, it's not what they want.
Yeah.
They want that green, sweet thing. That has orange juice in it and Midori and whatever else. But they don't want to feel bad by ordering it.
Right.
They don't want to be made to look dumb. They don't want to be made to look uneducated. They don't want to be led away from it. They might get away from it. And that comes from, and that's what you mentioned, the Rum House. The interesting thing about the Rum House is that we're making cocktails for people all over the planet. Right. People who don't have these things. The first time I was behind the bar there is like, I think our first or second night open, you know, these people are walking in and they're looking at me, they're like, what are you doing? Like, they've never seen that kind of, like, somebody moving like that, and he put an egg in it, and he's doing this. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? So they start out saying, I want a Bud Light, which they can have. And almost invariably, they end by saying, either, do you guys make mojitos? Because that's the international cocktail.
Right.
Like, that's the one that everybody, like, from all over, be like, ah, I want a real cocktail. I want a mojito. Or they'll say, which is better, like, can you make something for me? And to get like a German couple coming in and like having that moment, who probably have never been in a bar that makes cocktails in their whole lives, is, I mean, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you just said before in the show, making that first Manhattan for someone who's never had one before.
Sure.
That's a real experience for not only them, but for you as well as a bartender. Makes you feel really good.
Well, and it's also the only thing that keeps me coming back. I mean, it's hard to keep offering service over long periods of time. I've been doing it for a really long time. Other people have been doing it more. It's easy to hate people. And it's easy to complain about people. What's hard to do is hard. You have to love every single person.
Yeah.
And that's tough. Because they won't always tip, or they won't always like be good, or you know, they won't always drink what you think they should be drinking, but you know, you gotta care about all of them.
Yeah, just like your family.
Indeed.
You may not like them, but yeah, you're stuck with them.
Yep, they still gotta come over.
So another thing I wanted to talk about, well, I want to go back to what you were saying before about the, I feel like so many people, when they walk into the bar and, you know, they'll order a Bud Light or a vodka soda or whatever, it's more about a comfort zone. And
absolutely.
And something that they've heard of before. Maybe they haven't tried it, but they're willing to try it. But it's a name, like a Harvey Wahlbaker,
sure.
You know, like a mojito.
Yeah.
Even if they've never had a mojito, they've seen the name around and heard about it enough. And there are a lot of those drinks, like Melon Ball from back in the day, that you can actually make, like Stingers and Grasshoppers.
Stingers, fantastic drink.
Absolutely.
And we actually have a version of the Grasshopper on the menu of the Rum House, just because A, it's a lot of fun, and B, made well, it tastes delicious.
Dude, a Brandy Alexander?
Exactly.
Dude, all day long. I will drink them all day long.
You must be very careful, because they go down like candy.
They
candy
sure
water.
Do. John Lennon was one of his favorite drinks right before he died.
Ah, there you go.
He used to drink the hell out of them. Well, he and Harry Nilsson, that was their drink.
I did not.
But even a gin Alexander, like a traditional Alexander, it's great. Bulls Geneva Alexander, it's a killer.
There you go.
It's a milkshake. But yeah, I mean, like these drinks are fun. These drinks were from like the 70s and
sure.
80s. And a lot of the times these are the ones that people know. And you can take those formats and kind of church them up a little bit, you know? Like you put in your Grasshopper, you put like Broncometa, you know? Or, you know,
which
you,
is what I do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, really? Cool. Yeah. Cool. So there are these things that you can do to make this drink special for this person that didn't want to really step outside of the box, but then they're like, oh my God, this is the best Grasshopper I've ever had.
Well, you have to earn their trust,
oh,
and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
If I only drink one thing, then that's where I always go, because mostly in many bars, especially, let's say, within the last 10 years, if I go to a bar I don't know, I won't drink the beer on tap. Until I know that they're responsible enough to clean their lines and it's not going
right.
to taste like garbage. Because I don't want to waste $5, $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 on a beer that I'm not going to like.
Yeah.
So, and especially if it's a bar that I look around, I'm like, this place is a little junky. Like, I'll just take a bottle of Corona, please. Like,
right.
something I know that cannot be screwed up. You know, on the same side, you know, if you walk up to my bar, I mean, who am I? You know?
Yeah, sure.
Until you get to the moment you're like, oh my God, that guy's doing this or that, and maybe you want to participate, great. You don't want to, then that means, I mean, my moment is always people who ask for a cocktail menu, read it or look at it, and either get intimidated, not want to actually have to read all the words, or don't trust that what they're going to get is not going to be too sweet or whatever they say. So they're going to read the menu and then they put it down and say, okay, I'll have a beer. You're like, okay. I mean, it's fine, but I know what that is. I know you're interested in a cocktail. You looked at the menu, and for whatever reason, you said, you know what? Maybe not now. Maybe I'll just go with what I know I'm going to want. And that's fine, too, because just getting that first read means that I know what you're here for.
Absolutely. But also, in that same rank, those people typically, in my experience anyway, they'll hang out with that beer, they'll see all the cocktails you're making, that other people are drinking and enjoying and like sharing with their friends and going, oh my God, this is great. And then the next round, they're like, you know what? What was that thing? Let me try that.
Exactly. Maybe this time, maybe next time, you know? But you know you got them a little bit, and you know they're interested. So, and sometimes I actually do then, in that moment, say to somebody, like, I saw that you were looking at cocktails. You know, it, just so you know, I'm here for you. Like, here's your beer. It's cool. But, you know, if you want to have that conversation, we can have that conversation. And probably 9 times out of 10, they want to have it.
Absolutely. And that is what the customer service is all about, which you guys do a very good job at.
Thank you so much.
And for everyone listening, you got to get over to Ward 3 or Rum House. Either one, you'll have a really great time. Be sure to ask if Michael's there. He'll make you a killer drink, and he'll be very kind to you. Thanks so much again for coming on the show, Michael.
Pleasure. And I actually write for SeriousEats.com about bartending and cocktail making. And so every Wednesday, which means today, if you go to drinks.SeriousEats.com from behind the bar, you can kind of listen to me pontificate more than I actually do.
Excellent. Thanks again.
All right, buddy.
All right. That's it for the Speakeasy today. I'm Damon Bolte. We will see you next week. Cheers. That cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie. The cat's higher than a kite. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Man, I wouldn't lie, the cat's higher than a kite. Boys, he's high, just look at them two black eyes. You know I wouldn't lie, he's higher than the sky. When you see him tipping round that